Good evening, everybody. At least it's evening here, as you can see by the shadow on this little map, which has, I think, more accurate time than it might be possible to get elsewhere. So it's within, you know, a second or half a second, something of that nature. Today, our work will continue as we move up to the gradually to the Oversoul in the three fundamentals of the secret doctrine. We will be stopping at 11:30 sharp, according to this clock, and 9:30 p.m. GMT sharp. There are some emergency things that have to be dealt with on the inside, and it's just necessary. So I just want to let's see, what do I want to do here? Get to you over there, and I just want to welcome you, Andrea and Annette and Brennan and Karsten, Catherine and Chris, Deborah and Diana, and Eric. Okay. Francine, some of you look like you're relatively new to some of these activities. Heike and Helen. And Hilda. Ishtar. Joan and Johi and Karen. Let's see where I am here. Looks like Ishtar and Judy and Joan and Johi and Karen and Mariana. Martha Gallagher, I wrote you a little note, Martha, if you would be so kind to respond to Tuya regarding it. Martha Mickelson, hi, Natney, Nessa, Nicole, Nienke, and Rose, Sarah, Stephen, Vera, Danaidi, and Veronica. And over here on the other side, Joe and Michael, and Tuya's there too, so hopefully we can keep things as straight as possible. We're on our way to, as I say, the third fundamental of the secret doctrine. We have reviewed, let me just check here how that's coming through, I think, adequately, more or less. Yeah, I think so. Okay, we have reviewed the seven systemic laws and some of the words connected with them. Goodness, beginning. And I wonder, Michael, do you know, did we do this before? Do you know where we were beginning exactly? Was it with possibly all souls are identical with the Oversoul? Do you have that? Because it's beginning to look a little familiar.
Well, why don't we do a little review and then get into the section, all souls are identical with the Oversoul. I believe that's where we stopped.
If that's where we stopped, then I want to get right into that because there's not much time. We have the names of these seven solar systemic laws, and we know that Vulcan starts everything vibrating through the hit of the hammer, as it were. We have a wonderful name for the second ray, and it's called the ray of attractive coherency, and that, of course, tells us about the law of cohesion. We have the law of disintegration, which fits so well with the third ray divine separator. And I think the law of magnetic control is a fourth ray law and involves Mercury. Fixation, well, Venus is involved. It's symbolically the magnifying glass, and it fixes the very center of the beam upon whatever it is you're concentrating upon. This law of love is more Neptunian than anything else, in a slightly lesser degree than the monadic second ray Neptune. It's sixth ray Neptune, and then sacrifice and death take us into the entombment of the spirit, and we do know that the moon is veiling Uranus for the, now I'll show you what it is here, and I think you'll see that.
Michael?
Yes.
Michael, can you hear me?
Yes.
Let's are you back, or do we need to switch you out of presenter role?
Well, I'm here.
Can you unfreeze?
I think
yeah, but is your screen okay?
I think I can unfreeze if I do.
Yeah, your webcam if
okay, now we go.
Okay, there you go.
But let's just see if okay, good. Let's see how this works. Anyway, we have many names connected with the rays, which correlate with the seven systemic laws. Yes, we did this before. The laws are operative on the seven planes, and we can find the seven planes, I think, by, you know, looking over here. This is Tuya's, and I'm looking for something different right now. Let's see how we go here. Just take a moment, and it'll be local D, and it'll be AB diagrams. And hopefully this will bring us there. Yeah, it does. And here are the seven planes we're talking about, particularly each one of them ruled by a group of monads. And notice down here that the dead moon is considered the ruler of these elemental lives. Really, in fact, that violet moon is veiling Uranus. So Uranus is the ruler down here below. There's some switching around, which is unusual in our solar system, and it doesn't exactly go in order. But that is another subject, and I don't think we need to deal with it right this moment. Let's see, a little bit more perhaps. Yes, something about the law of magnetic control related to the solar angels, very influential since it is the fourth law, influential on us, on the fourth globe of the fourth chain of the fourth planetary scheme. This is by numerical resonance. So I think, you know, that may be enough. DK says every manifested life has its three great cycles. And some of these words are interesting to us. Birth, as we might figure out, is appearance. Life is growth, and death is apparent disappearance. Birth is involution. And for the first 35 years of life, generically, that's how it goes. Although some people start their evolution sooner, life is evolution, and death is a temporary obscuration, a temporary disappearance. We also have tamas, rajas, and sattva. Interestingly enough, birth is descent into tamas, or inert motion. Life carries the rajasic aspect, which is activity here, and death, the eternally lovely secret of death, carries us into sattva, which is much to be desired. So that is interesting, given how much people seem to be fearing it. And here, yes, this is a tamasic life and all the rest. Okay. Let's see if there's anything else here. Sound and color, the first methods of healing, are going to be revealed through sound and color. And there are many, many blinds when we are considering sound and color, and people are very confident about it, but it's not something to be too confident about, because there are different methods of understanding it. However, I have a feeling that out of Germany and such nations that have a combination of the fourth and fifth ray, much will be revealed about the exact frequencies of the sounds and the colors. A very deep knowledge of mathematics is required for this, and the fourth ray, interestingly enough, under which this revelation will come, and think about this, sorry, the fourth ray is called the ray of mathematical exactitude. Sometimes the fifth ray is called the mathematical type, but there's something about the attunement of all things to each other through exact frequencies, creating proper resonances, which is related to the fourth ray. So there are many veils, and there's a veiling process going on here. It is deliberate, so we don't have too much power to create and destroy, given our rather selfish tendencies. Notice here as well that the present rays of humanity, what do you think they are? You know, fourth ray soul, fifth ray personality. Eventually, they will be the second ray soul and fourth ray personality. DK has said that the fourth ray is very important, especially in the mental nature, in his work. Yes, this combination of rays will be strong during the Aquarian age, which brings in the fifth ray, and already, well, we're in a very large fourth ray cycle. It has a cycle of some, 40,000 plus years, and 21,000 years of it have already elapsed. You can see how arcane and exacting is this science of cycles, and how far we are from, well, really knowing much about it. We know a few things and only a few things, and so we remain with our minds open to these subjects. So a lot will be coming in the Aquarian Age. The numbers 4 and 5 will bring us the initiate, because the true initiate at the Transfiguration uses the Ajna Center and the 5th ray. And later Mercury comes in here with the 4th ray, and the 4th ray is assigned to the 4th initiation. It doesn't just keep going that way. You would expect there is some 3rd ray in the 5th initiation, but really the ray given is the 1st ray for the 5th initiation. DK says, I'll just read what he said earlier. Knowledge of the cycles involves knowledge of number, sound, and color. And Blavatsky has given us some of this as she has numbered the various notes on the C major scale and assigned color to them. And we can also see what they veil. It's a very arcane language, and we have to begin to learn it. Then point number 8, remember, he's writing in black here. Point number 8, full knowledge of the mystery of cycles is in the possession only of the perfected adept. Now, when you when you go to this, you go to this map and you see that all knowledge is on the 3rd level of the atmic plane. That is where the place to which the perfected adept can reach. Beyond that, he gives us nothing, because he says that the 2nd subplane applies to the Chohan, and the 1st subplane to the Chohan of the 7th degree, both of which are beyond the perfected adept. But basically, we have to master Brahma. Brahma is the principle of intelligence, and we're even left out of the 2 subplanes of Brahma because they pertain to initiates whose rank is still higher than master. One day we will be, it will be revealed to us what are those qualities. And basically, and this is important, all of these things are blank, okay? But they're not really blank. On every level, something of note is going on. Even on the highest 2 esoteric levels, something of note is going on. He just does not feel that it's necessary to describe it, since it pertains to Chohans and Chohans of the 7th degree. All right, now take notes as you go, okay? And occasionally I'm getting some little sounds, and I'm sorry if you're hearing those bells. There's nothing I can do about it right this moment. May we say that the adept has learned much of what the 5th grade of hierarchy of solar angels has to offer. Now, we remember that the solar angels, at least with regard to our planet, were human beings. in the previous solar system, but they were successful human beings coming from the previous solar system, and they went on to become solar angels and maybe some other things. There were unsuccessful human beings, and they became members of the Black Lodge, and also simply the laggards or the wanderers into our solar system. So let's see, fifth grade of hierarchy, and is highly responsive to the gifts of the triads. In other words, the adept can pick up on what's going on within the hierarchy ruled by the triads, and notice, here they are. The triads are right here, and they're found on the atmic plane. They're called the triple flowers, and they are called lesser builders, and they have the force of mind, Janana Shakti, and their planet is Saturn, which is very connected with the master, and their sign is Libra. Beyond that, we get into monads and still higher initiates. Okay, read this carefully if you wish, and you can find it on Makara. The full knowledge of cycles is not yet ours, but it will be. As we progress towards adeptship, and if you think that's so far away, it may not be as far away as you imagine, because he says that many initiates of the fifth degree will be needed during the Aquarian age to help humanity address the issues of that age in the proper manner. Okay, so I know we've taken quite a bit of time looking at these fundamentals, that there is one boundless immutable principle. It has no cause whatsoever. You could say it's the cause of itself, but that's just sort of evading the fact that it is that which is forever. And if you, if that idea grabs hold of you, it's a very strange idea, because everything else that we know about seems to have a cause. And this has no cause, because a cause always precedes an effect, and there's nothing. This boundless immutable principle is the unpreceded, and it's the one without a two. It's the one without a second. And then we learn there is this law that pertains to all manifestation called the law of periodicity. And finally, you know, and I tried to elaborate on these things because I knew that people tend to study, unfortunately, with a degree of a superficiality. And so I wanted to go deep enough into it so there would be no excuses. Actually, what I'm going to do here, since this is a very small print. All right, I raised it a bit. All right, I raised it a bit. Okay, now, I started last time by talking about Ralph Waldo Emerson, the Boston Brahmin, the clergyman who seemed to know a lot about the philosophy of India. All souls are identical with the Oversoul. Now just think about that. All souls are identical. With the Oversoul. The Oversoul obviously has a superior perspective. And can see many things at the same time. And usually when we think about our soul, we think, oh, you know, it's limited to the causal body, it's limited to the egoic lotus. It's a certain unit of consciousness. But what happens when that unit of consciousness turns out to be far less limited than we thought, and in fact, identical with the soul of the universe? Okay. What happens when that happens? If we could peel away enough layers, what would happen? Okay. So, identical with the consciousness, I better put it in capital letters, of the universal logos. Remember, each time, well, the universal logos is really the extension of one being. Always there are different limitations upon this sort of absolute deity above a universe. And we may think that the different universal logoi are really different from each other, but it's essentially the same being under different states of limitation, and you are that. Okay. All souls are identical with the one consciousness which detects everything in the universe through self-observation. Now that's interesting. Self-observation is the revealer. Now, of course, these things are way beyond us as we are presently constituted. But I want to offer the thought that we have experienced this repeatedly forever without beginning, cyclically. Now, you know, it's a bit tough to think of yourself as such an expansive being, because we're all caught with normal personal problems, and we slip into them, and we forget our true identity. We forget. But we can remind ourselves as well by stripping away the limitation, by learning how to identify as being, you know, am I this face? Am I these hands? Am I this body? Well, not really. What am I? And before you know it, you've taken all the mistaken limitations away, and you find that you're a very, very subtle thing, or no thing, and we call it being. It's, if you extend the idea of being, it's really the most subtle thing that is. And I'd like to propose also that real being has no cause. It just always was. Now, sometimes we get into that principle, that boundless, immutable principle, and we say, well, it's not being, it's be-ness. It's that out of which be-ness, being came. But, you know, I think that's splitting hairs in a way. You see, I've often repeated to you and to myself, it's not what a thing is, it's that the thing is at all. The be-ness, the being of a thing, transcends its quality. The being of anything goes beyond its quality. It's the raw fact of being, which is beyond the good and evil of quality. Now, can we get that? Because all things are equal in being, regardless of whether they are hierarchically arranged in the universe, or even in absolute infinitude. When you get to being, everything's equal. And only when you get into the hierarchy that is found in every universe, I don't mean our little planetary hierarchy, I mean the hierarchical arrangement, that's where you get good and bad and better and worse and up and down and all that, which are secondary factors. So DK goes on a little bit here. And it's been a while since I've studied what I wrote, so just bear with me. The logos, now he's come way, way down, you know. Sometimes Blavatsky is, it seems to be, he's at the top of the universe, if I can use so funny a phrase. And other times she plunges right down into our solar system and even just deals with our planetary manifestation. And all her comings and all her goings, you've got to follow it and say, hey, where is she now? About what is she talking? Well, this is about the solar system, the logos of the solar system, you know, using the sun as its body, is the Mach macrocosm, the big world. Man is the microcosm, but in a way, you know, our planetary logos is a macrocosm compared to us. And the cosmic logos beyond our, immediately beyond our solar system, is also a macrocosm. Well, there are big worlds and little worlds, and we're used to the idea now of the fractal, in which the big world is reflected, maybe not with total accuracy, but close in the little world. So DK basically focuses in Cosmic Fire on four cosms or worlds. He focuses on the atom of substance. He focuses on man, considering man as an atom. He focuses on the planetary logos, considering the planetary logos as a larger atom. Sorry. And finally, he focuses upon the solar logos and other solar logoi as solar atoms. Now, he could keep going, but he probably figures, look, there's so many analogies to be worked out right there. And in this written commentary, I've worked and dealt with some of those analogies. They are not necessarily exact, but they are suggestive. And if you don't know something at point A, knowing something at point B can help you know something at point A. And thus it goes, and you fill in the blanks. Cosmic Fire is an amazing book, and you kind of wonder whether in his third installment he will write anything as voluminous as Cosmic Fire. Because look, it's considered to be, by him at least, the psychological key to the secret doctrine. I don't suspect he's going to write a mathematical key, but he could write a numerical key, and maybe he's already written an astrological key. You know, these are the big treatises that he might focus upon. Now, maybe I have a couple of things to say here. This is at least one definition of a macrocosm, our solar logos. And as I say, even greater entities are macrocosms. We could say that if a solar god is wondering what is its macrocosm, it might look to the arm of the galaxy or the whole galaxy. There's always a bigger world until there isn't, at least in cosmos. And when you finally reach the consummation of our universe or any universe, the only place to go for the bigger world is into absolute infinity, which is a, what can I call it, an articulated reflection of homogeneous, universally transcending God. We've got this absolute God, and the articulated vision of that absolute God is absolute infinity. So this, you know, for terminological consistency, he is dealing with the solar logos as the macrocosm of man, particularly. The term soul is associated with the number three, which is unusual, and perhaps this can be explained by the thought that the number three seems to fall into the second place, because the number one is given to that which remains abstracted and unmanifest. Okay, maybe that's not so necessary. We could get into that. But the point is here, remember what he says in Rule 5. Then no longer use the thought, my soul and thy soul. If I were to, I've got too much open here, as usual. But if I were to, let's say, go to page, I don't know, 23, a little bit far, and I would say it's Rule 5 is a wonderful rule in unison. Let the group perceive the triad shining forth. This is, of course, the group initiate, dimming the light of the soul and blotting out the light of form. The macrocosmic whole is all there is. Now here, we don't mean the solar logos, because obviously the solar logos is not all there is. We have to talk about infinity or something for an all there is. But anyway, the macrocosmic whole is all there is. And maybe in universe, it's the universal whole. Let the group perceive that whole. And then no longer use the thought, my soul and thine. Well, maybe we got to get over that. Get over the get over the my soul and thine thought. Then no longer use the thought, my soul and thine. We use it all the time now. Who are you as a soul? Who am I as a soul? In the law of magnetic impulse, second law of the soul, we have to relate to each other as souls. But what if there's only one soul? What if there's only one consciousness with all those different apertures or points of view, like Argus, who is said to have had 10,000 eyes, the same being, but all those thousands of eyes. Maybe that's how the soul really is. So the macrocosmic whole is all there is, and we don't anymore use the thought, my soul and thine. Well, when you're involved in identifying as being, it becomes a little easier for something to come over you, and you just don't think of soul as separate, like my soul is separate from your soul. There may be an emanation which expresses through different instruments, but the essence of the soul is pure being, pure consciousness, and it's all the same. Now, the search for oneness in the midst of all of this variety is a very big search. And it does require the use of the third ray, I think. You know, there's one great mistaken thought. Mistaken thoughts are called, in the old language, they're called heresies. And in the old days, you know, if you were promoting a heresy, your days might not be long upon the earth. They would come for you because they didn't want false thought propagated. But DK says there's only one heresy. Only one. Really. The great heresy of separateness. The great heresy of separateness. Now you can see that even though it's a relatively high thought, if I say my soul and thy soul, I'm still a victim of the great heresy of separateness. It's only when I discover, actually, through realization, very subtle, this one something, that I am leaving behind the great heresy of separateness. Now, obviously, not everybody's ready for that. They have a lot of things still they need to do in the realm of illusory multiplicity. They need to think that everything is different from everything else. But you reach a point in your development when, even though you can deal with difference, you need to know that everything is the same as everything else. Think about that for a minute. You know, and one day you wake up, and in different degrees of being awake, and you discover, you know, in a way that's admissible, not a lower egocentric way, you discover, hey, this universe is all about me. It's me in a big sense. Me with capitals. It's not all about tiny little ego me, which is a much lower reflection. This is a mystery, and it's, I changed it into my story, a meistery. This whole thing is a story about me, and there's only one me, and we're it, and we'll discover what we've done in this story, according to how we were supposed to write it. Okay, so that's one point. The logos of the solar system is the macrocosm. Soul is an aspect of every form of life. From a logos to an atom, it's simply a kind of sensitivity or touchingness or responsiveness or the ability to register contact. That might be good, Judy. She said that the one soul is like a single, multifaceted diamond. I'm sure we can find different ways of trying to describe this. Of course, that multifaceted diamond is okay for soul. It's not okay for being, which is homogeneous, or what shall we call it, identical with itself. And here I'm trying to look at the difference between aspects and attributes. The aspect is an inherent fundamental, and an attribute is more external to an aspect. Aspects are structural, fundamental, and attributes are modes of expression. Well, you can even look at attributes as being a sevenfold structure, but they are, as it were, farther from the center. And this is all about the hylozoistic theory, which affirms that all lives are conscious, or soul is inherently consciousness. I think there was a, quite a while ago, an Indian scientist which basically was working with the consciousness of minerals and the fatigue of minerals, and his name was Bose, B-O-S-E, and he was much talked about in theosophical circles. See, when you go into high school and maybe you take chemistry, the very first mistake they make is they teach you that there is inanimate objects, living objects, and things that are not living. So not animate substances, in which they would include the mineral. But Dr. Bose, he's showing us that everything is alive, and that everything has consciousness, because in a way, everything is the result of self-observation through consciousness. There is one great universal logos at any one time. It observes itself through consciousness. And that self-observation is what creates smaller and smaller beings that interact during the cycle of the universe and eventually come together in such a way, eventually, that the archetype, which is the design of the entire universe, is fulfilled. Well, there are many questions that arose in different classes. And it may be indeed that a particular spiritual triad or monad works through a grouping of apparently lower lives, a grouping of mineral, a grouping of vegetable or animal forms. We've been through that. We, the apparently human monad, have been through expression as members of the lower three kingdoms, and even some of those kingdoms that are still involutionary and coming down. Once you've made the turn, which you do as a mineral, you're on the evolutionary path. And here's a statement that someone suggested, that bacteria of the same strain, for instance, behave like one individual. Well, we'll have a chance to find out with this new virus-related epidemic. Of course, the virus is much smaller than a bacterium, and in a way much less accessible to cure. It does seem like a bit of an emergency, doesn't it, what's going on? And everyone's going to have to be careful. You know, there are many prophecies, and we are told, you know, that if the planetary logos of our planet couldn't arrange for the purification of humanity and maybe other facets of the planet in a straightforward manner that was not so drastic, he would use instead a great epidemic. Well, you know, you go back to the period right after World War I, there were no antibiotics, and even now, antibiotics are becoming less effective to superbugs. And 50 million people, it is said, perished in the Spanish flu epidemic following World War I. I think, you know, there was a Great Depression, loss of vitality. Having gone through that, a war, a susceptibility, that's an amazing number of people. And there are prophecies from Native Americans that Tuya told me about. Maybe it'll be mentioned a little later. Okay, a little more and not much more. In a pyramidical universe, think about this for a minute and see if it strikes you as correct. There are fewer, or far fewer, I should have done it that way, far fewer monads than atoms, and fewer men than animals of all kinds. And it would seem that with the in-mineralization, in vegetalization and the in-zoonation of the monad, you know, three kingdoms, mineral, vegetable, animal, the one monad, hence the one triad, would have to be associated evolutionarily with many forms of the lower kingdom. Now, some people think that there's a one-to-one link up with a tiny atom of substance and every monad. And I tend to think that that is not likely, given the probable pyramidal shape of the hierarchical universe. There's one at the top and many at the bottom. Now, DK again, writing in black. I have, you know, I, as I say, there's a bit of a, I'm not going to be able to finish all this. There's a bit of a something that has to be taken care of. So I have to end in a half hour sharp. Okay. Here's DK writing again. This relationship between all souls, apparently limited consciousnesses, excuse me, and the oversoul constitutes the basis for the scientific belief in brotherhood. Brotherhood is a fact in nature and not an ideal. I mean, we are units of being consciousness, and we are circumscribed in our emanational journey to certain range of sensitivity. Now, that range of sensitivity, as we begin to evolve, it's wider and wider and wider. And so, in fact, all of us, in terms of essential being, are the same. And being the same, we're all emanated brothers, sisters, however you want to look at it, of the one universal Father or Father Mother. All these ever lessening emanations have the same origin and ultimately are the same thing. So we need to think of brotherhood in a new way, and I have a feeling that when the Aquarian Age is some 16, 17, 1800 years in, that we will have enough scientific knowledge of the inner planes to make that determination. First, the soul has to be scientifically discovered, and fifth ray, Pisces soul, France, it's given to France to do it. Can't think of a better combination. The scientific fifth ray and the most sensitive, soul sensitive of all the signs, Pisces. So we're going to learn first to think of each other as brothers and sisters, and secondly, and it'll be even more important, to think of ourselves as the same thing. Well, there's more to be said here, but I'm going to wait until the next opportunity to finish this section. We'll hear about the mineral kingdom and where you find it. There you go. There's a bit more. He ends with a statement. The solar logos is the sum total of all states of consciousness within the solar system. And we will check out the footnote. So rather than push too extremely, I'm going to go back here. And I'm going to copy this and go down to where I was, if I can find that. Aha, right. All right, so here is really where we are with the great idea of brotherhood. Now, that's one of the things, you know. The Theosophical Society was supposed to be a great example of brotherhood. And it didn't turn out that way, unfortunately. So when we begin next time, group webinar 11, and probably, let's see, I forgot how I did this. Group webinar 11, I did 4 webinars by myself when I was stopped at one point. And I've included them. So basically, this is the 7th of February that apparently we meet again. And what page are we on here, Michael or Joe? You see?
Maybe it is page 7.
Okay. Very good. Making a lot of progress here. But we do have to have a clear ideal. Not ideal, that's the wrong word. Idea of the fundamentals. Now there will be eventually 7 fundamentals of the secret doctrine. We've been given 3. And a 4th involving astrology and rheology is in process of being formulated. I guess there's no rush here, but maybe DK will go further in his next set of bridging treatises from the knowledge of man to the knowledge of the adepts. Let's see. The most important thing for us now is to assimilate and apply. We're very much required on the inner side. And when we do work like within the Esoteric United Nations or the Blue Rose Sisterhood, where we create a chalice of love wisdom, for the coming of the Christ and his energy. And when we learn the details of the ageless wisdom, we are preparing. We are preparing for greater usefulness in service. We all want that if we're a real disciple. We all want that. And that's going to take some extra work on the part of a number of disciples through some very stressful times, because the forces of form, negativity, are once again aroused in a very strong way. So it's not going to be an easy 5 years before the great conclave. And some of the measurements we give have to do with lasting until the 28th of December in the year 2026. Okay. Let me just get this how it should be. All right. I really hope that you're not hearing the bells that I'm hearing. I'm hearing all kinds of bells, and I don't know why.
Well, we're not hearing them.
Okay. It's all going on inside this particular head, and I'm very happy for that. But I do think my computer is somewhat responsible here. If Master DK comes knocking, I'll let you know and say, just give me a few minutes. Okay, friends, now, in order to be finished in not much time, I open the floor. for any thoughts, questions about what we've been dealing with here. There's a lot here in the analysis. I haven't obviously gotten into all of it, but DK does say a few things. The logos of the solar system is the macrocosm. Man is the microcosm. He says soul is an aspect of every form of life, from a logos to an atom, and that's the and beyond and beyond. That's the hylozoistic mode of thinking, and the relationship between all souls and the oversoul constitutes the basis for the scientific belief in brotherhood, and brotherhood is a fact in nature and not just an ideal. So we have a few minutes, and if there's anybody that would like to ask anything, see, maybe Michael, you could spot them, if there is anybody. Ask, state, question, whatever. Now, don't be afraid, you know. Just dive in. There's something. Okay.
Perhaps someone is writing.
Judy is correct here. Inorganic chemistry and organic chemistry. Correct. That's how they view it. And there's really nothing, according to hylozoism, that is inorganic. Maybe it satisfies people to think of those kinds of substances as unresponsive, but deeper scientists have already proven that long ago. I'm sorry, Michael, I interrupted you. You were saying.
Perhaps they're busy writing. In the late 1800s, early 1900s, Jagdish Bose was heavily involved in researching the consciousness of plants.
Yes, he did plants, and he did metals too. Interestingly enough, he would talk about metal fatigue and the consciousness of the minerals themselves. So we know that if the atom of substance has consciousness, then everything that those atoms constitute as consciousness as well. And Moria says, it's so interesting, he says, okay, you have a machine that's not working. He says, talk to it. I mean, this is coming from a master. This is interesting. Talk to the machine and encourage its right functioning. Well, that's Mineral Kingdom.
And in healing group that I was involved in, people would bring their car or something to the group for healing.
Ah, I trust
that. And why not?
Occasionally it may have worked out. Maybe it did, huh?
And why not?
A couple of people are now writing some things, and they do talk to their cars here. Apparently, Roz is talking to her car, and that's good, Roz. And Judy is saying again here, all forms exist because of the fire, which is life. And, well, you know, definitions, what can I say? There's something which is the absolute essential, and it has no cause, and it is not fire, but in universe we have three creative substances: electric fire, solar fire, and fire by friction. And we have certain spirits, 49 of them, associated with each kind of fire. You know, I'm forgetting exactly what it is. Well, anyway, you know, connected with the solar fire and connected with the seven, with the fires of electric fire, seven spirits of darkness and all their differentiations. And we have certain Devic forces connected with the fire by friction. All that is true. But when we come to the essence, it's really not this, not that, not this, not that. It's its own nameless something or no thing, out of which all things arose, including fire. Okay. Diana? Where are we here? In the pyramidal universe, a monad, millions of atoms, does it mean a photographic shot of a moment in the progress of the upward journey? Because every atom is like a spark, which will become a sun. And this is, you're hitting upon a subject which is mysterious. It has to do with the amalgamation of units. Now, if I go over here and find Parabrahm, can I find Parabrahm? The bells are really making me a little crazy here. Two, three, there it is. The amalgamation of units. Seven become one, which is one of seven, which becomes one, which is one of seven, which becomes one. And until there's only one left. Now, I don't know if this reaches to the very height of the universe. And sometimes I think there are some things that are wrong about it. I don't think, for instance, the chit should be related to Vishnu at all or to the sun, but rather that Ananda should be. And the father should be Shiva and not Brahma. There are mistakes in this chart, but it gives the idea of the amalgamation of units. So if I say to you, look, you are as much I as I am I. I am as much you as you are you. It sounds like double talk, like I'm saying something that couldn't be true. But on the way up, the many merge into the one, and the identity of the many, which did merge into the one, is now the identity of the one. And that one is probably one of seven. And again, there's going to be a merging of seven into one, or maybe three into one, you know, that kind of thing, because the merging takes place in different phases. So on the way up, and this is the tricky part, we do not maintain an isolated identity. We merge with other units like ourselves, and suddenly we're all the same thing. Not just what we were when we were isolated. You bring your X-ness, I bring my Y-ness, someone brings their Z-ness. It all gets mixed together, and that's our identity. And the only way to reach the top of the universe, which is a crazy, you know, kind of statement, but I think you know what I mean, the climax of a universe is through this merging. Now, right now, we're in a stage where we really want to protect our individuality. I am I, you are you, and so forth. I am I, you are you. But there comes a time, literally, I am as much you as I am I. Okay? Now we're getting to the point, you know, it's almost 11:30 and I have promised. Now here are some more things being written.
There's a long comment from Ishtar.
Yes. And might I have calendar alarms set on this computer? I don't know. It is escaping me at the moment.
I suspect it's your Skype notifications, but that's my sense.
It's causing bells in my head, you know? Okay. As long as it's not causing bells for you. Could the Oversoul be seen as a monad in a, let's say, solar system macrocosm? The Oversoul is the consciousness of the one universal monad. The Oversoul in the maximal state is the consciousness of the one universal identity or monad, which itself, you would think it would be the whole thing, but it's not. It just gets compressed down into the tiniest fragment of absolute infinity. So Ishtar saying, in my current experience, it takes time for the body physical to catch up with the energy pouring through in part of soul infusion, and I have to agree, and lots of trouble can happen along the way in the question of adjustment, even when, let's say, your solar plexus is moving to your heart. There are diseases that go along with that, sacral to throat, base of spine to head. It's all because of friction, and the adjustment is not smooth yet. The years of dross, stored in the physical, starts to malfunction, or at least to come up in your face, you know. That's Pluto's job, and it has to be refined and or sent on its way. You've got to get rid of it in the bottom of your aura, because unconsciously it prevents a better functioning of your system. Add the catalyst that onto us, to bring out the last unconscious unhealed parts, add to the energy strains. Okay, well, basically, we're saying the same thing. I'm personally working through a diet change. So my Balaware chakras, I'm not sure about the terminology, okay, can become higher in vibration, balancing the crown inpouring that you are having. Okay. So that's personal experience on your part. And we're all going to have, as the lower moves to the higher, moments of friction and maladjustment. It's inescapable. So in a year's time, okay, I hope to be in better state. Thank you for sharing your tips, and love to everybody. Okay, great. Well, look, you know, we start many experiments. And we say, oh, well, that's just a question of the lower energies moving into the higher. But what we don't realize is that we are on a planet which is maladjusted to the second ray. We are on a third ray personal planet. And the third ray and the second ray are always hard to integrate. And we're still dominated by the third ray, and the second ray is trying to come in. And so there's friction. Here's the third ray, here's the second ray, here's the first ray, in generically speaking. So right now, we're trying to bring the soul of our planet through. That's the second ray. And by the way, the soul of the solar system as well. And that will help our planet particularly. So anyway, yes, it said here, Judy saying it, the soul is the relationship between life and form. I would say, you know, one way I think of it is the degree of self-consciousness of the life aspect. What else is there to be conscious of? You know, you start from the beginning, there's only one, so all of this is created or become out of itself. Like there's nothing out there waiting for the hands to reach for, and now you start creating. It's you, you know. Everything is you, and only by operating within yourself is apparent variety created. Now, friends, I think, yeah, okay. I think I'm going to have to call it a day here. It's interesting. And, I have just 4 minutes. So we'll meet again in a week and let's do the great invocation together. And I thank you all for attending. And, if any of you are so inclined, there's kind of an emergency going on in the United States Senate, which is basically an ignominious cover up of the truth. So let's see if we can intervene in there and at least lend our power to something more truthful. So the great invocation, friends, and I'll test all those bells, Joe, and try to make sure that there's a reason for them. The great invocation. From the point of light, within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. You can make a longer om than I can make. Let's just do them. Oh. Oh, oh. Okay, thank you, everybody. We have more to do before we finish this section, and we'll keep on going, trying to give a rounded out and synthetic point of view of the secret doctrine in as much depth as possible. Thank you for attending, and if your mind can turn towards the U.S. Senate and try to get some fairness in the vote, promoting that, thinking of the avatar of the United States, Abraham Lincoln. I think it would be worth a try. They may suspend until next week. We don't know. We hope that the good emerges. Okay, many blessings, lots of love from everybody. It's now time, exactly 9:30 GMT. All the best. Talk to you soon. Tomorrow morning, Soul of Nations, 6 a.m.
China.
A GMT what?
China.
Oh, yes. And we're going to be working with China that is in very great crisis. So if you can join us 6 a.m. GMT, please do. Lots of love, many blessings. Talk to you soon.